This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, November 16th, 2016. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Poetry in the Aftermath. It has been a week since the election, and the country is still trying to come to grips with the outcome. A poet I've interviewed on this program a few times, Kathleen Rooney, said on Facebook, "It's like the election wasn't just an election, but the portal to a horrifying alternate reality." You may or may not agree with the horrifying part, but I think it's safe to say that this election changed the world, much more than a lot of people thought it would, and it's going to affect poets and ultimately the poems they write, at the very least. We thought it was a good time to check in with a few poets to get a sense of what they're thinking and feeling. We'll hear from Kazem Ali later in the podcast. Joining me now is Carolyn Forché, who has witnessed, thought about, and put into her poetry some of the most dire events of recent decades. In 1993, she edited the groundbreaking anthology Against Forgetting, 20th Century Poetry of Witness. Carolyn, do you share with Kathleen Rooney the feeling that we've just gone through a portal to a horrifying new reality?
I do agree. I also feel that I have a sense that most people were not expecting this portal to open, and most people were not imagining the nature of the portal. I was not terribly surprised by the outcome of the election.
Really?
I was disappointed, but not surprised. I'm from Michigan. I traveled to Michigan a month before the election. I knew that Michigan would probably go with Trump. And if it did, the upper Midwest might go with it. I did sense that he was appealing to a populist sentiment that was going to prevail, and it prevailed on the right this time.
So you're a poet, and you've responded in your poetry to events in the past. What was your response this time as a poet?
Well, I wrote some thoughts on Thursday morning. It was the first time I could put anything on paper. And I wrote, "In times like these, and from what I know of the world, one must marshal inner strength, must be courageous and resolute, calm and vigilant, must connect with others of like mind, must not compromise with racism, bigotry, and hatred, but must also be quietly prepared for the consequences of every confrontation, prepared for physical harm, imprisonment, even death. We must do so anyway. We must go to every length to protect others. Not all humans can do this. We should not be judgmental of them. There were dissidents under totalitarianism who worked for decades, quietly and at great peril, and eventually that system collapsed. I believe that our president-elect will sit in the White House and everything will be done by others, most especially by the legislature. They will change some laws, but he will not be able to deliver on the promises he has made to the people who elected him. There will come a time when his supporters will realize they have been betrayed. Then we'll see. Those are my thoughts."
That's eloquent and terrifying to hear your thoughts and the seriousness and the gravity of the situation that you acknowledge in those thoughts. You've spent time in countries suffering from political violence and authoritarian rule, and you've met a lot of poets in those countries. Talk about the role that poetry can play in situations like that.
People in El Salvador respected poetry greatly and said they couldn't live without it, and that it had most valuably helped them survive imprisonment. Most of the countries I've been in have had great poetic traditions and have felt that poetry was something that touched their hearts and their spirits and held them together as a people during times of great duress. I find it interesting now and really soothing in a way that so many people are turning to poetry and looking for poems online and gathering poems together. There have been great searches for poetry over the internet in the past few days. People, in times of great duress, and we are in those times now, poetry is a strengthening art.
You're right. There's a sudden need for it. And we've seen this in the past. After September 11th, something very similar took place. And there are poems going viral on the internet as we speak. I asked you to come up with a poem or two that speaks to you right now. So tell us what you chose.
There's an excerpt from Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman, to whom I turn often. And periodically, the United States suffers a period of duress, such as this one. And this is what he wanted to say at the time. And in his conclusion, I feel he is making an admission of feeling isolated as well, as a poetic voice. So this is the excerpt. Long, too long, America. Traveling roads all even and peaceful. You learned from joys and prosperity only. But now, ah now, to learn from crises of anguish, advancing, grappling with direst fate and recoiling not, and now to conceive and show to the world what your children en masse really are. For who except myself has yet conceived what your children en masse really are. This poem, the reason I chose it is that despite the wars we've been prosecuting since 9/11, really, despite those wars and despite the sufferings of people all over the world and the sufferings of people in our own country, the United States has not had to live under an authoritarian regime, has not had to live in a fascist state such as we may be facing now. And I think the poem is about what we do when we're so tested as we are being now.
And what is it? What is it, what conclusion do you draw out of that? What should we do? What is Whitman telling us to do?
I think he's saying that we must recoil not, recoiling not. I think this moment calls for courage, not for crying, not for bemoaning what happened, and not even actually for dwelling upon what happened. There are many, many, many interlocking reasons why the vote turned out as it did and why we're now facing what we're facing.
Right.
But this is a time to be watchful. Things may happen very quickly. This is a time to pay attention, not to tune out, to stay awake, to choose areas in which we can be daily and continually active.
You also chose a poem by a contemporary poet, Ilya Kamenskij, which came out in 2013. And this poem makes me feel incredibly guilty. Would you read that poem?
We lived happily during the war. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed. Around my bed, America was falling. Invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the sixth month of a disastrous rain, in the house of money, in the street of money, in the city of money, in the country of money, our great country of money, we, forgive us, lived happily during the war. Ilya Kamenskij.
Wow. Now that makes me feel about as guilty as I've felt in quite some time.
It does so to me too. I feel as other people feel, in shock, but I want to assure people that it's possible to survive these things and it's possible to resist, and we have to build a national resistance, and it's going to become frightening on another level than it already has. Right now, we're existentially frightened. There may come a time when we have concrete reasons to be directly frightened and when we're under threat. And I want to emphasize that those of us who live in privileged places, working in privileged jobs, in privileged communities, we must protect everyone else.
Carolyn Frechet, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Climate change is real. 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 Climate change is real.
Sounds from an anti-Trump march that took place in New York City on Saturday, November 12th. Next up, Kazem Ali. He's a poet, essayist, fiction writer, and translator who teaches at Oberlin College in Ohio. He was born in the UK to Muslim parents of Indian descent. I asked him, what were his greatest fears for the future?
You know, it's each passing day brings a new fear. I mean, you may have a climate change denier who is in charge of the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trauma or a feeling of moving backwards or going back to exclusion.
Yeah.
So when you say make America great again, when that is the slogan, it's the again that has trauma for certain people.
Yeah.
Because in the before time, those were the people, the gay people, people of color, women that were excluded.
Is there a particular poem that you would like to read that speaks to you in this historical moment?
Why, yes, Curtis, there is. I happen to have it with me. Yes, you know, I chose a poem by Fanny Howe.
Okay.
Who is a great, great touchstone.
Explain who she is a little bit, Fanny Howe.
Fanny Howe is an American poet. She was born in 1941, and she grew up in what she calls the Deep North, quote unquote, the Deep North. She grew up in a very segregated Boston. She's a white poet, but mm-hmm. she's engaged, you know, very deeply and complexly with issues of social justice and race throughout her writing career.
Mm-hmm. So what poem of Fanny Howe's did you choose?
I chose a poem called Veteran, and shall I read it to you?
Yeah, please.
I don't believe in ashes. Some of the others do. I don't believe in better or best. Some of the others do. I don't believe in 1,000 flowers or the first robin of the year or statues made of dust. Some of the others do. I don't believe in seeking sheet music by Boston Common on a snowy day. Don't believe in the lighting of malls seasonably. When I'm sleeping, I don't believe in time as we own it, though some of the others might. Sad lace on green. Veterans stamping the leafy snow. I don't believe in holidays, long-lasting and artificial. Some of the others do. I don't believe in starlings of crenellated wings. I don't believe in berries, red and orange, hanging on thread-like twigs. Some of the others do. I don't believe in the light on the river moving with it, or the green bulbs hanging on the elms, outdoors, indoors. I don't believe in a gridlock of ripples or the deep walls people live inside. Some of the others believe in food and drink and perfume. I don't. And I don't believe in shut-in time for those who committed a crime of passion. Like a sweetheart of the iceberg, or wings lost at sea, the wind is what I believe in, the one that moves around each form.
That was Veteran by Fanny Howe. So tell us, why this poem? Why in this particular moment? What is this? What gets to you now about this poem?
I feel there is an eccentricity and a loveliness in owning one's outsider or outsidedness, of being in the minority, of being in radical disagreement with, you know, whatever the majority opinion is.
Mm.
And there is something beautifully American and countercultural about that. And we've always adored and supported and loved and maybe even fetishized the people who are at the margins, the people who are on the outside. So here is this speaker who is just, wow, like, alone in this surreal world, but there is one thing she believes in. Like a sweetheart of the iceberg or wings lost at sea, the wind is what I believe in, the one that moves around each form.
What do you suppose the wind at the end of that poem is?
I think the wind is It's not only what connects us, but it's external to us. She's not precisely talking about like cosmic energy or something. I mean, she's talking about an ordinary physical thing, wind. It's not just energetic. So there is something that surrounds each of us that we each have the same experience of. Whether we are made of the same material or not is irrelevant. It's that we are all experiencing the world in a certain way. We're not all the same at all. We're all quite different, of course, as we know. But we're all in it together, whatever it is.
Kazem Ali, you can find out more about him and about Carolyn Fouché on our website. In coming weeks, we're going to keep talking with poets to see what they're thinking and feeling. Do let us know what you thought of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. You can link to the podcast on social media from SoundCloud, and you can subscribe to it on iTunes. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.